Prospect Podcast. I'm Michael Halpern, here with Ralph Lifshitz. And there's some call-up action this week, so there's some news to talk about. Anthony Alford out of nowhere, surprise call-up, blowing up everyone's Twitter and shit. Brad Zimmer, his first homer, called up a few days ago. And Ian Happ was called up Saturday, the day after we recorded the last podcast. So let's get right into, you know, if these guys are up for good and, you know, what we think they could do this year and how you like them long-term still. So let's go with the guy today, Anthony Alford. I know our boy Make Prospects Great Again. He claims he has the inside info that Alford's only up until Tulowitzki comes back. So are you trusting our source, our Make Prospects Great Again source? You have your own info. What are you thinking, Ralph?
It seems totally reasonable. What a shock, though, huh? I was in an elevator about to head to lunch, and the alert popped on my phone. And I've been in this battle with Gray, particularly in the Perts League, to add every called up prospect as soon as I can. And for some reason, he's beat me to the last. He beat me to Happ and he beat me to Zimmer, which I was very upset about. Of course, I won Berrios, and then he talked me out of owning Berrios, and I dropped him.
And then he picked him
really
up?
He picked him up. And the funny thing is, I had an opportunity to pick up Berrios for yesterday's start. But right. I was looking at the Streaminator. If you use the tools on for streams on Razzball, they're great. You know, I've typically done really well with the Streaminator, and they had Trevor Cahill's start listed as, you know, like a $15 value. So it was one of the highest valued starts of the day. So I picked him over Berrios, and he's been great. And I mean, there was no reason for me not to do it. So I logged on at the first game started at 12:10 on Wednesday. I logged on at 12:10, 12:11. I made the add. Okay. And I made the choice to add Cahill over Berrios. I was going to add Berrios as my second guy, ended up going with Ryu. But I went back to add Berrios and I saw Gray added. I'm like, oh, whatever, no big deal. And then, of course, Cahill gets added onto the DL.
Yeah.
And Ryu's like, whatever. And Berrios comes out and has an absolute gem of a game. And that's just the kind of season that's been for me in Perth so far, and the kind of season that's been for Gray. His last 2 weeks, he's just overtaken the entire crowd. I had been in first for a while before that. And everything's gone wrong for me and everything's gone right for Gray. But he did drop Ian Happ, and I immediately picked him up and I've held him. So I'm really happy about Happ. But getting back to Alford, I know I went on a little bit of a tangent here, but it's all for a good reason. I hope you like my stories. It's story time with Uncle Ralph. But Alford was a shock, man. I didn't see this coming. I didn't think that this would happen until like a year from now. So, I mean, I imagine maybe he would get a September cup of coffee, maybe August if they had some injuries. So this was a big shock. Now, he's been hitting. He brings the power. He brings the speed. He's been very raw, but he's continued to get better and better and better. And sometimes these guys come up to the majors, as we've seen lately, and they hit and they look pretty damn good. And, you know, I don't think Ezekiel Carrera should be keeping Alford down for long if they're this aggressive with promoting him. So do I think he's going to be up long term? No, I think it's only going to be a couple of games. But the fact that they said Dwight Smith was to replace Pillar during Pillar's suspension, that's a good sign, because if he's covering for Tulo, we all know Tulowitzki's history with injuries. And as I was kind of jokingly said back to Make Prospects Great Again on Twitter, it wouldn't shock me if in Tulowitzki's first plate appearance, he ends up getting injuring himself and goes back in the DL for like another month and a half. So with that said, I don't expect Alford to be up for long. If you don't mind, I'll transition a little bit into Happ now. I think Happ is up. I think Happ is definitely up. He's hitting well. They're hitting him clean up. I don't know. I mean, if he's down, it's only going to be for a couple of weeks, and I would imagine he's going to be back up because Zubrus looks old. Javier Baez is hitting again. I think Hap's going to slot into that outfield and definitely be in the mix. And the fact that he's got the versatility, which is something we talked about in the offseason, I think he fits perfectly with Madden's approach and that team's approach sort of in general. What's your take on the Haps? Help?
I mean, Hap, yeah, you saw Madden. Someone asked Madden, Hap's making it really hard on you, right? And he gave, a classic, Madden smirk and answer of, or he's making it really easy. So I think that's his way of saying they're going with Hap. I mean, their Cubs are struggling a little bit. I don't think they're going to care about hurt feelings. I mean, Schwarber not having the best year, his playing time. Hayward's coming back tomorrow from off the DL. So yep. That's going to be more crowded. I don't know. They might not know what their plan is. If Hap keeps hitting, I think based on what Madden said, they want him to stay in the lineup. But to go back for Alford for a minute, the fact that they called him up shows that even if he's not up long term this time, he's clearly an option down the line.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of the stuff on Alford is like he gets a rap where like he's raw, and he was raw. But this year, he's striking out 17% at Double A, got 11.3 walk percentage, sitting 325. He's 9-for-10 on steals. So even on the bases, he's playing well. I don't know how raw he is more than that's just the rap he's been getting. It seems like he's been pretty refined. On both of them, they might both be called back down. I'm more confident in Hap like you. Do you think Zimmer's up for good? I mean, do you think that's done deal? He's up. They're going to let him work through struggles? Or if he struggles a little bit, are they going to send him right back down again? What's the leash?
Well, I think we all know the floor on Zimmer can be pretty low. So that might dictate what happens. Now, if he stays sort of middle of the road, he's hitting 240, 250, but he's showing some pop. He's playing excellent defense in center or right and left, wherever they decide to put him on a given day. And he's stealing bases. He's getting on base. Because that's the thing is he does have, that to sort of fall back on, that he's excellent in terms of his on-base percentage, at least walking. I don't see any reason why he would go down. I've said from the onset, from whatever, the off season when we first started covering these, it might have even been back in November or December when we covered the Indians. I thought this guy's glove was the best in the outfield for the Indians now, entering the season, probably was last year in the playoffs even though I know he wasn't on the playoff roster. And we kind of wondered if he might, sneak his way onto the playoff roster for that reason last season. And I think he's probably their most dynamic base runner. So I don't know why they wouldn't bring him up. And that Indians team is blah. They were grossly overrated based on what they did last year. And then with the addition of Edwin Encarnacion, that is not an offense that scares me terribly. But I think he's a dynamic kind of run producing player that they need. Do I think he's going to set the world on fire? No, but I think for real baseball wise, I think it's a smart move to keep him up. Typically when these prospects are up and they show that they can play and they can handle the big leagues a little bit and they're doing the little things like playing good defense, smart base running. Tito typically would keep a guy like that up. I know he stuck with Pedroia through some very serious struggles his first season in the majors. So, I think Zimmer's up. I think Zimmer's probably the most sure thing to stay up. Now, I'm going to say that, and he's probably going to get demoted on Monday. But I would place my chips on Zimmer if we're talking about, who's the least likely to get demoted.
Yeah, and I mean, we were both on that. Zimmer was one of the best players on their team already coming out of the offseason. So it's great to see him, in the International League, OPSing over 900.
Yep.
Basically, the skills were the same against the most advanced competition. The start was slightly slow, but he got extremely hot. I'm happy they brought him up already. Our team, yeah, maybe we'd be a little more aggressive with these super talented first round guys who kind of deserve to be up regardless of, these fringe fourth outfielders blocking them. There's always that fringe guy that's blocking them. And I feel for the fringe guy. They deserve a shot to prove themselves too. But these big time prospects, they should be up. I agree. I think unless there's hard struggles, it seems like they're going to go with them. They need a shot in the arm. So.
And I was going to add in based on the fourth outfielder type, Michael Martinez has moved this week. So that also opens up some spots in that outfield. So, I think that probably only strengthens our case a little bit. Hey, I know it wasn't on the agenda for today, but can I say something I heard really interesting? It was actually in the CBS podcast. I was up for a run, and I'm always trying to taking any baseball information I can. I don't know. It was one of their guys. I don't know if it was White or who was on today, but I can never differentiate. But he actually brought up a really interesting point that was mentioned during the broadcast, and it reminded me to bring up today regarding Berrios. I didn't realize this, but there's this difference between minor league baseballs and major league balls. Did you know this?
In terms of the seams? I did. When all of the juice ball stuff was coming out, Fangraphs had an article talking to baseball players,
Okay. Basically
describing the minor league ball and the major league ball, and they said all of them to a T that the major league ball was wound tighter, the minor league ball has bigger seams that they're able to grip easier, Yep. Things like that. So, yeah, so is that what they were talking about?
Well, I guess what Berrios did this year is he figured out that was an issue in terms of getting the right spin, because he has a really interesting curveball. I don't know if I would call it great. It has more slurvy action, but and I know that there were some hitters that were actually, you know, really complimenting the pitch yesterday. I forget who it was off the top of my mind. Maybe it was Ian Desmond was saying that he could really manipulate his curveball. He likened him actually to Jose Fernandez. That's some pretty lofty praise. But what I was getting to here is Berrios actually was practicing in his side sessions with a major league ball to get a better handle on the grip sort of thing, you know, the feel, so he could get the right spin on his breaking pitches, this two-seamer, the curve, some of that stuff. I thought that was a really interesting point.
That is great tidbit.
Had I known that, I might have bought into Berrios a lot earlier. I was in trade negotiations on Tuesday and Wednesday to try to acquire Berrios. I was getting closer on Thursday, couldn't close the deal. And now the negotiations are off. He pitched that gem. I was watching that game last night going, please give up a homer. Like, please give up like a four-run job so I can get you on my team. It's killer. So, yeah, I mean, Berrios right now, if you own him, I don't know if I'd sell high. I mean, he looked so damn good the last two starts. I mean, how many, especially this year where it seems like it's the start apocalypse and this guy's gone out and pitched, what, 7 2/3 in consecutive starts and looked pretty damn good, you know?
Yeah, I was skeptical, but after the last start, a 10K effort after just the atrociousness, I guess I gotta be back on board. I still want to be cautious, but yeah. I mean, he does have the minor league numbers. That MLB debut tainted me too much.
Yeah.
Obviously tainted me too much. And I mentioned last week, Dansby Swanson hit 300. Like, maybe those short debuts, and it's not only me, you see, you know, the major publications too, even though not that I care what, but like, point is, like, it's hard to not have that be like a little extra tiebreaker, you know?
Yeah.
It's a little rough.
Totally agree. Great. I don't know though, man. The Berrios thing is like a splinter in my brain at the moment, because with these rankings, it's like if I don't rank the hot new pitcher of the week super high, like I went from not ranking Alex Wood, and it's almost like people forgot this guy's constantly injured and there's rotation questions with everybody in the Dodgers rotation except for Clayton Kershaw in terms of how many starts they're going to make. So I went from not ranking him to 60, and like I got killed over it. You know, and I'm like I should have ranked this guy in the top 40. Like
in every week, Ralph's doing the top 100 pitcher rankings.
Oh my god!
But in every week ranking, inherently, it's very tough.
It's Berrios. There's no way I'm gonna rank Berrios high enough. The guys at CBS were saying they want to rank him in the top 40.
Well, Paul Sporer had him 70 in his latest rankings before the start.
I had him 60. I had him 60 entering the week.
I like your Berrios ranking. Or, the Wood one, I thought was a little bit. We talked about your Wood ranking on the baseball podcast that I do with Gray. So, yeah, we covered that. I thought you were a little low on that, but the Berrios ranking I'm on.
Yeah, I was just being conservative with Wood. Like, that's really what it came down to. And these Dodgers pitchers are just a massive pain in the ass with the way that these guys are manipulating the 10-day DL with a 7-man rotation.
Yeah.
It's very Belichickian, so I do appreciate some good work in the system. But,
it's just smart. I mean, let's just call it smart.
But as a fantasy player, it is frustrating as hell. So let's move on to some prospects. I know I'm getting us into some redraft talk here, and I don't want to infringe upon the copyright that you and Gray have.
Yeah, we were towing a line there. We went fully over the line there. Let's go back. Let's bring it back to let's go with top prospect news in the minors. Eric Fetty. He moved to the bullpen, which I would say I was thinking about it a lot. as an organizational move, if I'm Washington, I like it. They're in the pennant chase. They're going for it this year. He's had Tommy John surgery before. There is no guarantee he's even a starter long-term, even though I like him a starter long-term. He still has to develop the third pitch. I know guys like Keith Law mentioned still a lot of reliever risk due to that third pitch. So I like getting the value now while they can, while they're winning. From a developmental standpoint, I can't imagine it's the best for him. I can't imagine it's optimal. So I actually just traded for Fed in my league. I traded Braun on a one-year deal in my dynasty league for Fed and a pick. I'm upset in that standpoint. From the team standpoint, though, I understand. So I can't really be that pissed.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been some good and some bad examples of that. Chris Sale obviously started out in the bullpen, and we've seen what he's ascended to, the best pitcher in baseball at the moment.
You know, Wainwright's the classic one.
Yeah, Wainwright obviously being another one. And there was wasn't there another Cardinals starter that
Waka, I think they started out in the pen. Waka or Carlos Martinez. Carlos true. Martinez, they started in the pen.
And then the bad example was somebody like Lucas Giolito, who was brought up to the majors. They ended up in the pen, and it's just been a mess since. But I think that's him more than anything else. And I think that, you know, that's just some of the struggles that he's had as a player. I don't think that Fetty's gonna have the same issues. My guess is that Fetty should probably be up sometime in June. Now, this guy comes up. Is he going to get a crack in the closer role? I mean, it's not like anybody's running away with that job. Now, I still think Kota Glover deserves a month or two with that job. I really do. I think he hasn't gotten a fair shake in comparison to some of the vets on that team. You know, Albers is garbage. Why not give Kota Glover a shot? But if you don't give Kota Glover a shot, why not give Fetty a shot? And I actually think you keep on drawing me back into these redraft conversations. Fetty could be a really interesting player in an RCL type of format where you're streaming relievers, because he's going to have probably boosted K numbers, and he's damn good. He's good. He's a good pitcher, you know, and he's a commodity that I'm a little bit more familiar with than some of these 29-year-old relievers who have a breakthrough, you know,
sure,
in their 28-year-old year in AAA.
Constantly. I mean, that's constantly so many of them. That's because they're just not that good. It's real. I'm really not a huge fan of the 100 relievers, even though I know that's where baseball's going. It's just because they're not that good. So the only time they could make an impact is when they're like 28. You know what I mean? It's when they got the experience and they're still throwing 100. I don't know. I don't love the specialist relievers. I feel like they're not that good at baseball. They could just pitch really hard for like less than an inning. I don't know. I do like all the pitching changes and stuff like that. I prefer a time where like the starter went most of the game. It's done though. It's over.
Yeah, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, it's a lot easier. It's a lot less work. If I could just, you know, roll out starters, they go a little bit longer.
Oh, right. No, I was saying baseball fan perspective. But yeah, fantasy too.
Yeah, I mean, from a baseball fan perspective, I kind of like it because I think it's strategic. Like,
oh, true. You know,
How these guys are using their bullpen differentiates good managers from bad managers, and ultimately it differentiates the guys that burn out their pens and maybe get a good year out of guys and then ultimately are unsuccessful going forward because they pitch these guys for too many innings. Torrey was notorious for that toward the end of his tenure with the Yankees.
Well, Torrey would just have one or two guys he would treat as whipping boys, which I get it. I get it because you're just going to – those are your guys you're just going to wear down. You don't give a shit about their career.
Oh, man. Who is that journeyman?
Scott Proctor.
innings on that guy's arm. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Because while he was good, we might as well use him. I get it. It sucks for him.
Yep. And Jeff Nelson, but that guy was just a bulldog. Oh, of course. He'd like take a ton of innings. But, yeah, I mean, I can look at it from both ways. I just love baseball. So – if that's where the game develops to, there'll be a cycle, and it will cycle back to starters going a little bit longer. I don't think those days are completely behind us. I think there's going to be a breakthrough. Now, do I ever think there's going to be another Mark Fidrich? By the way, I always mention Mark Fidrich when we're talking about a ton of innings because
– when you say there's going to be a breakthrough, do you mean like a medical breakthrough that allows these guys to go 300 innings pitch? Because that will be fucking – that will be interesting if that does happen.
I just think that they're going to I can't imagine the bullpen thing keeps on developing to the point that we start using guys for three innings at a time. I just don't see it going that way, you know?
See, that's where I kind of see it going. I see these guys like a Carson Fulmer going 2 to 3 innings as their best role. That's how I see it going, but I don't know, you know?
See, I just can't imagine it. I just can't imagine it would. It's just going to hit a breaking point. It's going to hit a breaking point. Maybe there's a medical breakthrough or something where I just can't see it keep continuing going down this road. You know, things go in cycles. We never thought we would see power numbers like we did again, and we're seeing them again, you know? So
true. No, it's interesting.
There's always something there. I can't completely dismiss it. Now, is it likely to happen in the next 5 or 10 years? Probably not. But
no, obviously it's going to be a longer cycle. Yeah.
I think that eventually the cycle is going to come back. That these guys are going to start going more innings. Again, gotcha. You know,
50 years from now, Ralph will declare. We're 80-year-old Ralph and Hal will tweet me. Right. Told you so.
Yeah, but what I was going to say is, like, it's not like we're going to see another Mark Fidrich. And by the way, I always bring up Mark Fidrich because I live in his hometown. I live like a mile away from like where the truck dropped on his head. You know, that actually happened. You can Google it. But that guy pitched like his rookie year. He had one great season. And then he was pretty much junk because of injuries the rest of his career. But the guy pitched like 27 complete games, just an absurd number in his rookie year. It was crazy. But I don't think we see that again. But I think we could see guys going 240 innings. I think that will start to happen a little bit more, you know, besides Madison Bumgarner.
Right, besides Madison Bumgarner. All right, that's a bold take. There it is. I guess I still think it's going the other way, but I like it. I like a bold take like that. All right, let's dig in further into the minors. Let's talk about a couple of Bash Brothers, the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, woo! Hoskins and Cozens. Hoskins, obviously, we talked about, Ralph's boy. Cozens was always the bigger question mark between the two. But in May, I'll start with Cozens just because I find it interesting. So in April, he hit 136. In May, he's slashing 308, 370, 692 with 7 homers.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, we talked about Hoskins a lot. You could definitely go into him if you want. For sure. We love him. The question is, you know, with Joseph, whether or not he's going to get the call. But I'm really interested in Cozens and what I mean, is he a top 100 prospect? Are we betting on him now? What are you thinking?
Man, he was a top 100 prospect halfway through the season. Then he struggled a little bit more with the strikeouts. And you started to see some of the issues. But you know what? The way the game is going, everybody's striking out. He's not all that unique. Now, 37% is pretty absurd. And even during his hot streak over this, whatever, 12-game winning streak that ended yesterday with the Iron Pigs, Bacon USA, baby. Cozens was, you know, still striking out at a 30% clip. Now, he walks. He's got speed. He's got power.
Got athleticism.
He's doing it in a, at best, you would call the International League a hitter-neutral league. How can we not believe that this guy's power is real? This is a guy that's going to – he's going to slug. Man, he's going to have a good slugging percentage. He's going to get on base. OPS leagues, I don't think he's going to kill you all that much. The batting average may never be great, but really what's – and I asked somebody this the other day, Mike from Raz 30. We have a lot of conversations, and he was actually at the Iron Pigs game, you know, game versus the Red Wings yesterday, and – I'd ask him, really, what's the difference between him and Bradley Zimmer? Is there really a big difference between him and Bradley Zimmer? Cozens is a little bit more power heavy, where Zimmer's a little bit more speed heavy. Both get on base, both strike out a ton. You know, Cozens is a bad fielder, so that's really the big difference in terms of a real life list. But if we're talking fantasy, Cozens is pretty exciting. I mean, I actually picked him up in a league recently, and somebody called me out on it. They were like, I thought you hated this guy, Ralph. And I'm like, I did, but he's getting hot. It's May. Philly's got nothing to play for. This guy could come up on one of my team in July and could hit 15 home runs and steal 5 to 6, 7 bases. You know what I mean? Average going to be good? No. Do I think Rhys Hoskins is the better player? Absolutely. I think Rhys Hoskins is one of the best hitters in the minors right now. I mean, and the numbers speak to it. But I don't think we can dismiss Cozens anymore. Regardless of the strikeouts and how bad he can look at times, the dude wallops the ball, and that plays in fantasy.
Yeah, I think everyone was saying, you know, double A Redding. The fact that he's doing it in the International League now, AAA, I think everyone has to buy in a little bit that his profile will be good enough to play, and he won't be hitting, you know, 170. You know, because like the raw power, the power is on question. So as long as he can get that, if he could keep the average to like 240, 250. The Phillies are not that great, even though they do have some decent outfield options. And they got like a Nick Willie. You know, there's other guys in the mix. Yeah. And Roman Quinn, we should bring up as well, who's had a hot month. He's also due to get a shot. Yeah. So I agree with you that International League, what Cozens is doing now, I didn't hate Cousins. In my top 200, I had him about 130. I had Hoskins like 110. I think Hoskins moves up into like a top 50 prospect. I think Cousins moves up into like a top. You know, he doesn't have the speed that Zimmer has. I like your Zimmer take, though. It's an interesting take to say, yeah, if people like Zimmer and they think Zimmer could hit, you should probably like Cousins too. I get that. So, yeah, I think Cousins is in the top 100 as well. Let's get into ETA and when these guys could come up. I mentioned already when we talked about Hoskins on the last podcast, Joseph was struggling. We both said, yeah, you know, he could get hot. Always a possibility. He has. He's been hitting better. So
he's hit like 430 and with like seven homers in May.
Yeah, so he got hot. We let a fire under. You know, a lot of times, right when you're ready to give up on these guys is when they're at their low, and then they get hot. I mean, that's how baseball works. So it's kind of, you know, we talk every week about these guys. But all right, so my question is, who do you think will be up first for this year between Quinn, Cousins, and Hoskins? And do you think Joseph is going to hold the job down?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Quinn up first. I think Quinn could beat up like any week now. We've already seen him in Philly. He's got the defense over Cousins. You know, he runs a little bit. So, I think he can slot a little bit more into like, I hate to say utility, but I think he can be sort of a fourth outfielder, pinch runner. You know, we have to think about some of the subs and things like that in the National League and in the National League game. And I think that's why Hoskins will be up before the middle of June. I just think he's hitting too well. And I said this to somebody in my comments today is, you know, when a guy is hitting like this and he's 24 years old, they're not going to hold him down that long. And it's not – Tommy Joseph is hot right now. They'll find Hoskins at bats. I know neither of them play any other positions. I know, you know, Tommy Joseph is a converted catcher and he's not going back that way. Played a couple of games at third base in the minor leagues. Yeah, I know Hoskins is pretty much a first base guy. I haven't studied Tommy Joseph's defense enough to know which one is the better defensive first baseman. But I still think Hoskins is the better bat. Hoskins is a better hitter to me. Joseph is a power guy, middling average. Hoskins could be a legit fantasy superstar that comes out of nowhere. And I think that he's creeping closer and closer and closer to that. And maybe that's a little bit of hyperbole because I know I'm a big Hoskins fan, but the guy's slashing 343, 430, 709 with 12 homers, 35 RBIs. He's tied for the lead in the International League in homers. He's fourth in batting average. He's first in RBIs and runs. What else does he have to prove, you know? He just seems like he's just a professional hitter. He doesn't strike out all that much. He walks at a high clip. He's a guy that can help a baseball team now. And, you know, they have no reason to force him up, but there's no way they keep a guy like that down until August. They just don't. It's just not the way it works, you know?
I'm with you. I think they have to find him at bats at some point. You mentioned the strikeout. I mean, 16.5 K percentage, 13.3 walk percentage. With the power he's putting up, you said the triple slash. Hap obviously has a little more versatility, but you see Hap forced his way in, and they're finding him at bats. That's a good Cubs team that understands what they're doing. I'm really happy they did not just leave him blocked down there. Philly's got to figure it out the same thing, because I'm with you. There is no reason he should not be getting at bats pretty soon. I'm with you. But if I'm my guess, I agree Quinn is probably the first one up, just because he's like, he could play every outfield spot and he could put together like a professional bat, stuff like that. I hope I'm wrong, though. I hope they squeeze Hoskins in.
Yeah, I think all three are going to be up by, you know, July. There's no way it's not going to happen. And who knows? If I'm the Phillies, I'm looking to trade Tommy Joseph and see what I can get by the deadline, you know?
Sure. And he's got a lot of team control. I would trade him too. Because even, like you said, so if they don't bring him up this year and Joseph has a solid year, so then what? Hoskins is blocked forever? They have to make the move on the better player at one point. I'm with you. Do you think Nick Williams is dead? I don't want to go too much into Nick Williams, but do you think they're done? Is he not first in line anymore?
Yes, and Crab Scout Mike backed up my position on Nick Williams. He's just not a good baseball player.
I didn't like him before.
He's like, I did. I mean, he was my first bust, man. I mean, if you look at my first top 100 list, Nick Williams is a top 20 prospect to me. Because he can hit. When he was
not
in the Rangers system, the dude raked. And usually that plays. But You know what? He's just, when you watch him play, you just realize this guy doesn't know how to play baseball. He doesn't know how to take a professional at bat. He makes poor plays in the field. He's just a tools guy with all the potential in the world. You watch him in batting practice, and he looks like the best player on the team. He's like a long drive guy. He's like the guy that goes to the driving range and can crush the ball, you know, 400 feet, but he's got no short game, you know? So he always ends up being the worst golfer of the crew or something, you know?
I guess he looks good. He looks good in the uniform.
He's all show, man. He's all show.
Yeah, he's like you said, he's got the talent, so he'll be a guy that gets a lot of chances. But I think at this point he got passed up. All right, moving on to some pitching. Walker Buehler just like blow his last start. 9 strikeouts, 1 walk, and 3.2 innings pitched. The fastball is like 99 to 100. Yep. No one could touch it. It's got a good changeup. It's got a good breaking ball. I mean, the one knock is the most pitches he's ever had was 68 pitches in a start. So they're limiting him, but he's flying through those pitches. I don't know how he'll look later in the game. That's a question. Right now, there is not many pitching prospects I'd rather have. Him and like Tristan McKenzie are probably the fastest risers, and McKenzie was already more highly thought of. So Buehler might be like the fastest riser in the minors. I don't know. I mean, would you take him over like Marte's? Would you take, like, what do you think about him in like Allard? Like, is that the class you're putting him in?
Colby Allard, Allard, however you want to say it. I'm still saying Allard.
I think Allard's probably right.
Colby Allard to me is probably the most desirable guy because you've seen how advanced he is as a 20-year-old. And he's pitching, you know, 6-7 innings. I mean, it's not like he's even limited in terms of his pitch count. So at that young of an age, and the Braves knew what they were doing. They didn't put this guy in the Florida State League because they realized that high A was too advanced for him. So he's, in my eyes, he's jumped Mitch Keller. He's jumped those guys. Marte's is struggling, and I really, really like Marte's. And I read a great piece on Prospects 1500, which is another, you know, group of guys that support us and usually tweet out a lot of our stuff, you know, really good stuff over there. I think, you know, Make Prospects Great Again actually writes for them too. And
yeah, they do great work. I definitely vouch for that.
And they were and they had a great article about, you know, don't panic and sell Marte's right now. And I would agree on that. But when it comes to how I rank Marte's against an Allard, you got me saying Allard now, against an Allard. Or even somebody with the potential of like a Walker Buehler, it's tough for me not to inch those guys a little bit closer. I'm starting to feel like I would take Colby Allard over anybody. You know, he's a lefty, good stuff, can get deep into games. I like what the Braves have done with a lot of their pitching prospects. They seem to have turned a few guys around. You know, Sean Newcomb, you know, one who I think we're probably going to talk about in a little bit. So he's in that class. Buehler has worked his way up from right outside my top 100 to well within my top 50, probably within my top 10 pitching prospects. I'd like to see him go a little bit longer, but I understand their approach with the kid gloves with the Dodgers.
I already had Allard a step ahead of Marte's and those and Keller. I kind of just liked the curveball. I felt that curveball was so elite and the command. Yeah. And so I loved him. But I only had him around 50. I only had him with Anderson Espinosa. So I actually, my 2 years ago, my first ranking, I had him like 34. And then I moved him back a bit, you know, just because he was coming off the back injury and he wasn't like, even though he looked pretty good. But I love him too. Marte, still raw. The stuff is the same though. So it's just a question of you got to stick with him. It's still early in the year. I'm with you though. Buehler, top 50 prospect. I think I would take him over Marte, over Keller. It's just that upside that I love more than Keller's upside. I think Keller's probably safer. And Marte's upside is unrivaled. Really, it's some of the top of the majors, but he's still just too much of a thrower for me. I like refinement. You know, I like that changing of speeds. Fast. I don't know. I understand that the pure stuff and the electric stuff, you want to bet on that, and I do. But something about an artist on the mound always gets me a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's obviously some work to do with Marte's. But he was awful in his first 6 starts last year, too. And the numbers actually within this article on Prospects 1500 – they actually reference it and they show the numbers. It's almost like to like in terms of his walk to his strikeout to walk ratio, ERA, that sort of thing. So maybe he just stinks in the early going. Maybe he's like the Edwin Encarnacion of pitching prospects.
Yeah, you got to be patient. All right, so you mentioned Sean Newcomb. What are you feeling on Newcomb? Is he higher for you?
I mean, he was a Massachusetts boy, you know, growing up a couple towns away from me. I was actually in a band with his cousin when I was 15 years old. So I've always wanted Newcomb to be good, but man, he's been frustrating. The walks and command and control have always been an issue. He's still walking guys at a very high clip, but it's down a little bit, maybe a walk or so from last year. The Ks are back up to double digit, you know, 10, 11 Ks per nine. And he's been excellent in the international league. He really has been very good at Gwinnett. He's had five or six straight starts now where he's gone five innings plus and allowed two runs or less in each of those starts. These are great strides that Newcomb has made, because he was really a mess last year. And there were a lot of questions, even when he came over from the Angels, despite the numbers being really good in 2015 for Newcomb. He's a step away from the majors, and that would not shock me to see him come up and pitch pretty well for the Braves for, you know, a good chunk of the he's still a rookie pitcher, but you know, he could come up and give you decent strikeout numbers. He's still going to be a matchup play, but he's not bad.
Yeah, you know, he snuck on the back end of my top 100 this offseason, because even through the struggles, when you looked at the underlying numbers, strikes out a ton of guys, but also he doesn't give up homers. So no. That's just a really good combo of lots of strikeouts and not giving up homers. That's hard not to like. He's putting up the same numbers at AAA with a better ERA. The underlying numbers look pretty similar: strikeout, walk, and lack of homers allowed. You know, I can't think of the proper word, but not giving up home runs. And I think he could still be good. He got a lot of love 2 years ago. People had him as like a top of the rotation type of guy, and I know it cooled, but there's a chance people are sleeping on him, because that lots of strikeouts, no homers thing, I'm kind of digging that.
Yeah. He is a fly ball guy, though. His ground ball rate is about 36-37%. So we'll see how that plays. The homers are coming,
you're saying?
In that park. I don't know. I mean, his home run to fly ball ratio is incredibly low. It's like 5 or 6%.
He does it like every year, though, but you're right. The home runs could be coming.
I was about to bring up is that he's continually sort of kept low. I don't think guys, number one, I don't think guys hit, you know, make good contact on him often, because he doesn't leave much over the plate. And his stuff is filthy, so he gets tons of swings and misses. I wish I had a resource to get swinging strike numbers in the minors. There's got to be one out there. But if somebody knows one, shoot it to me over on Twitter. Send me an email, ralph@rasball.com. I'm always looking for some new resources in terms of data on minor league pitchers. I haven't been able to find the swinging strike rate, contact rates, and that sort of thing. But Newcomb's interesting, man, and his ex-FIP and FIP, everything's reading out that, you know, this is for real. So I actually mentioned today, I think he could be one of the starters that gets called up and, you know, could potentially have an impact, which is the complete opposite of a guy that we both love, another lefty, Josh Hader. Are you a little nervous right now with Hader?
Clearly, I'm more nervous than I was in the beginning of the year. I am still giving him a pass due to Colorado Springs. I brought it up constantly that Colorado Springs is garbage. I can't panic when I know that the environment is so trash for pitching. I don't know what they could possibly do. I might be hurting his development. I'm sticking with him. I'm giving him a pass. Still early in the year, so he's still getting his feet under him a little bit. He's in the horrible pitching environment. I watched one of his starts early in the year. The stuff still looked very good to me. It looked the same. The changeup didn't necessarily take a step forward or anything, but it still looked like he had the same stuff going on. So I'm giving him a pass. Why are you ready to are you a little more nervous than me?
I am nervous, and I'm more nervous than I was with Tyler O'Neill. So when we bring out the prospect panic scale, I'm at a heavy orange with Josh Hader right now. And the reason is he's actually pitching worse than his numbers. His numbers are actually better than his peripherals. His peripherals are bad too. Now the K numbers are down, but I want to say if you take a look at the leaders in K per nine in the PCL, there's very few guys that are over 10%. I mean, that are over 10 Ks per nine, if any. He's still, I think, within the top 10 to 12 starters in terms of K per nine among qualified starters in the PCL at this point. So maybe we should take that with a grain of salt, but his numbers weren't this bad in the PCL last season. The thing that's making me a little nervous is Brandon Woodruff is in the same environment and he's pitching really well. His K to walk ratio is top three or four in that league. You know, he's got a plus eight K per nine. His walks are under three. ERA is good. He's dealing with Colorado Springs pretty well. What's up with that? What's your take on that? Does that kind of put things in perspective a little bit, or do you just think that he's just getting a little lucky?
No, I mean, I think that says more about Woodruff to me, that I'll move Woodruff up due to the fact he's pitching so well in a tough environment. He's still not one of my favorite pitchers, and I still don't like righties in Milwaukee, but I know he had more love than I was giving him from many other sources, including you.
Yep.
And I definitely like him more. So no, I don't think that's a knock on Hader that he's doing well in the tough environment. I think that's just a more a peg up for him where it goes, you know, maybe this guy's more than just a back end arm. This is Colorado Springs is no joke. It's really not. So that does impress me. Hader, I'm giving the pass to. How about one more guy who came off the DL, David Polino? Do you think he's got a shot to be the next man up in Houston, possibly? Yo,
big shot to Barry Baker, too. I asked for some questions from listeners on Twitter this morning as I was putting together the outline. And this is actually a question from our man, Barry Baker. So
Polino?
Yeah, Polino was. He had a couple of
nice Barry, stuff. I mean, Baker's the man. He knows that already. I've given him mad shout-outs.
He gets love in all the podcasts. Too bad he's a filthy Liverpool fan, but we can move on and look beyond that. But David Polino, man, I don't know. I think this guy's a reliever. What do you think? I think he could be in the Davinsky role, or he could be like a seventh, eighth inning guy, setup guy. I'd love to see him as a starter, but I'm not sure I'm buying it. He's constantly injured too.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is it because of the injury? Yeah, so the injury risk really scares me. I like his – when he's on the mound, I mean, he's a big, lean, long guy. So his release point, I don't have the numbers on this. It seems to me his release point is very close to the batter when I'm watching him. I can't vouch for that completely. That's just my eye. And, you know, he's an uncomfortable at bat, and he's got multiple pitches. He's not like he's a two-pitch guy. But the injury risk does worry me. I do think they are going to stick with him in the rotation. I know they got Fiers there. They got their other young guy, the name's slipping me, the right, Joe Musgrove there. I think it's possible Polino could be the next guy up if one of them scuffle or if there's an injury. So this year, my guess is they're going to stick with him as rotation depth, and eventually he will get the call, assuming he stays healthy. Long term, you could be right. I don't know if he could pitch 180 innings. You know, he just doesn't have the track record of it.
Yeah, maybe he takes Fire's job. I don't know. That's possible. He's going to have to pitch well, though, to overtake Fire still.
True. All right, let's move on to some hitting. I know a lot of people asking, you know, when Meadows is going to be up, when Fisher's going to be up. Let's start with Meadows. You know, Polanco hurt, Marte suspended. Do you think he can come up middle of the year? You think he's going to just be a September guy?
He's totally dictated by the Super 2 date, and they're going to be conservative. I know the latest the Super 2 has been, like the lowest number of days was 120, because it's based on, so we can explain it, it's 22%. If your players are in the top 22% in terms of service time accrued within that three-year window, then they qualify for Super 2 to get bumped up into arbitration eligibility a year earlier, which is why a team like the Pirates have held guys down until July to call them up in order to make sure that they eliminate all of their prospects that are called up from potentially being considered Super 2s. So just to explain that, there is no specific date. It's dictated at the end of the season. So it really is dictated by when guys are called up and who's in that top 22% of players. But with some of these call-ups with Bellinger and some of these other guys, it may help a little bit move it up. So I know that you know, the question with Meadows and even with Moncada is these guys have no reason to call them up any earlier than that. So I think Meadows we could see in July, maybe mid to late June, depending upon the way the call-ups go over the next month or so. But I think he's no more than a month and a half away. I'd be shocked if they wait until after the All-Star break. I think he'll be up before then. I mean, this guy has hit, what, 223 in AAA, had a homer the other day, yesterday. We're recording this on Friday. So he had a homer on Thursday, which was a good sign. Let's hope he can get things together because he's an exciting player and one that we've both hyped up quite a bit. You know, both had him ranked within our top five.
I was going to say, you can continue, my bad.
No, I just corrected myself. It's a top three because I think we both had him in the top three.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm still completely with him. Picking it up over the last 10 games a little bit, hitting 302, 362, 465, 5-4 strikeout to walk rate in the last 10 games. So I think he is picking it up. The OPS is finally above 600. It's pretty weak when you rank someone in the top three, like you're saying. And then after the first month, you look at Baseball Reference and his OPS is 5-something. That is not that cool. But the OPS is now up a little bit. He's getting a little hot. I'm still fully on board. I think the contact power combo is still in there, sure. even with a little bit of the struggles. I think the Super 2, you're right. I don't think they're calling him up until then.
No, they never do. They're the penultimate, like, Super 2 team. And the other thing is, but that's in his favor, is the suspension for Marte and then the soft tissue injury for Polanco with the hamstring.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, there's a spot for him. And like you mentioned, Pitt runs a very tight ship. They run, like, a very small market team. They understand they don't sign these huge contracts. So they're not in it this year. So Meadows is going to definitely have to wait. I hope they do call him up after the Super 2. These rules are so confusing. I can't keep up with. Is there any advantage to just wait until September? Probably it. Does it save anything at all, or is it no difference? Or are you sure either way on that one?
No, I think there is a difference. If it was pushed back that late, they could actually call him up in September, then push him back down, which is one of the issues they're having with Moncada, that he was in the active roster for however many days. I remember what the number was. But that's another reason he could stay down. And that was actually another question last year, if you remember, as to when Trey Turner was going to get the call. And it's possible that Turner might have been up in May or June had he not had that cup of coffee at the end of 2015 with the big club.
True. And I think Turner was kind of pushing the issue more just because they were a contender. I'd be worried that Meadows is not getting the call until a cup of coffee, but who the hell knows? He could easily be up after the Super 2.
It really depends how well he hits and what the situation is in Pittsburgh. But if it stays status quo, Polanco maybe tries to come back and is hurt again, and Meadows hits and just, you know, rakes in the rest of May here and June, I think that Meadows forces the issue and gets the call.
All right, Derek Fisher, another guy knocking on the door for Houston. I mean, he loves himself the PCL. He took it up a notch there last year. This year he's slashing .323, .384, .574, 9 homers in 38 games. The profile, even with the high average, the profile still looks the same to me. Still looks like a .260-ish hitter, 20-plus homers. I thought maybe he can get to approach 20 steals, but now I'm starting to think maybe more like a 10-plus guy.
Yeah, caught too much.
Yeah, he's getting caught too much. And he was never known as a huge speed guy. He was more, you know, instincts and taking advantage of minor league catchers. But I still, you know, he still did put up good numbers. Kind of, maybe he's Jock Peterson in himself a little bit right here. But I like him better as a hitter. He can hit lefties too very well. He doesn't not hit lefties. Again, the question is, when will he be up? I guess his best shot at being up is a trade. But he can force his way into Houston's lineup. Their outfielders aren't like Aoki, Beltran. They're not setting the world on fire, these guys.
When should Derek Fisher be up? Now. He should be up right freaking now. He's the one that's killing me, because I feel like Fisher's the best option for that outfield right now. He should be up. He's doing everything he can. The guy's improved in terms of his approach. You know, his walk numbers have gone up. Strikeout rates have gone down. 23 is certainly an acceptable number at this point. I know he was 28, you know, closer to 30 early in his career. So he's a guy that's gotten better as he's moved ahead. And I really think that that's a telltale sign of success in the major league level. He's hitting for average. He's hitting for power. I'm not as concerned about the speed. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a 25 steal guy or 20 steal guy. He's got 6 steals. I think he's been caught 5 or 6 times. So, you know, it's an even split. But they may run with him at times. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But he's got enough speed to at least get you a couple of steals. You know, 10 or so. Maybe you know, mid-teens. But you have to be excited about the bat right now. The guy's just hitting everything.
He should be up already, right? They're out, really, Aoki. I mean,
doesn't make any sense.
And Beltran's not doing much.
No. No, there's a bunch of shit bums in that team that are grossly overrated, and Fisher should be up because he is one of their best 9 players.
I think it's getting there. I think it's approaching that time. I think they're feeling
it. He could be up tomorrow. It could just happen. It's going to happen. He's going to get the call, and I'm going to rush to my phone again. I'll probably be in the middle of doing something with my kids. Last season, every call-up happened while I was next to my phone, almost other than Cody Ballinger, I haven't been next to my phone for a single call up.
Small sample size. It'll even out.
It probably will.
It'll even out. All right, moving on. Willie Calhoun. Fucking love Willie Calhoun. Yeah. 5 homers in the last 9 games, as Ralph mentioned on his beat sheet. He's got a 12.4% K percentage, 7 homers overall. The same elite contact power game is there in the PCL. You know, they're running Utley out there right now doing shit. But any hope that the Dodgers give him a chance at second, or does he also need a trade to the AL or something? I mean, I don't know what he has to do. I do know he's one of the best bats in the minors.
You know what? I'm going to say something, and I mean it. Calhoun is – I've heard reports that he's gotten a little bit better in the field. Now, I know he's not going to be a great second baseman. Bring him up and see what happens. And if you have to move him to left field or something, then fine. But they're losing options by the day. I don't know what the outcome was with Justin Turner's MRI on Friday. I haven't looked yet. I haven't checked. My assumption based on the talk is that they weren't all that optimistic that he was going to miss the DL. That means that Chris Taylor, who's just setting the world on fire, surprisingly, will probably be the starter at third. Chase Utley is an absolute skeleton at this point. Why not bring up Willie Calhoun? You're a good team. You got this youth movement going. You don't have you have enough more money than God. You don't have to worry about arbitration years and stuff like that. Damn it, bring Willie up and see what he can do, because this kid can hit, man. He can hit, and he's got the kind of approach that's going to play right from the jump in the major leagues. He walks, not a ton, but a little bit, not really a lot, 6 or 7%, but he doesn't strike out at all. He strikes out like 11, 12, 13% of the time. Yeah. That plays, and the guy's got contact ability. He knows how to put the bat in the ball and hit it hard, and that's what matters in the major leagues right now with the shift and everything else. We're starting to see these guys, you know, move a little bit more to, can you make good contact? Can you put the ball in the air? Sweet Willie does both. Bring him up.
Exactly. And I will say this about the Dodgers. They're not as concerned with range as other teams, so Willie's never going to have good range. So I think, yeah, if he can become shorthanded with how they shift, I think they might give him a chance.
Well, if you play him next to Seager and Bellinger, you know, you're not even going to have to worry about him making any plays. You
can Bellinger, I mean, that is a really good point with Bellinger. Bellinger will give some extra range there. No, I mean, yeah, for real.
Yeah, he absolutely will.
Seager's not known for his range. I'm sorry. But I think the problem with the left field thing that you said is I think he might be even worse in left field. I mean, we're seeing now outfield defense is saving the most runs, that, you know, it's preventing doubles. I don't think you want him roaming that outfield. I think that's a bigger problem, because he's going to give up. You need speed out there. He's got to learn how to play second, and he's with a good organization that doesn't care about range, but I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be up. You seem more optimistic than me.
He's got to be up, man, at some point. He's in AAA. He's hitting. The calls are going to happen. It's just at some point Willie's going to be up. Is he going to be up tomorrow? Probably not. But, man, I'd be shocked if we're talking mid-July. This guy's doing what he's doing in the PCL right now. Continues to hit for power and not strike out. That's a very special profile. There are very few hitters that can have 30 home run pop and strike out less than 20% of the time, let alone less than 15% of the time. And that's what Sweet Willie's doing.
Let's stick with second base. Scott Kingery, my boy Pace, made a comment on one of my posts. I think he made a comment on Rasball and Imaginary Brick Wall. So he's hitting up both. He wants the world to know about Scott Kingery. The fly ball rate up, ground ball rate down. It's evened out a little bit since he made the post about a week ago. It's not as extreme as it was. He has speed. He has good contact. He has a solid plate approach. I don't know. Is this a top 100 prospect for you?
Yeah, he's got to be in the top 100 prospect.
I think so, right? Yeah, I'm happy you agree.
He's kind of borderline on, like I always liked, but I needed to see a little bit more. And the ground balls and stuff worried me a little bit. But, dude, he's got a 53% fly ball rate. He had a 43% ground ball rate last year. I mean, that's a serious approach change. I mean, we can look at this, and he cut his ground ball to fly ball ratio in half. It was 1.04 last year. It's 0.53. His line drive rate is up, so he's hitting the ball harder. He's hitting the ball in the air more. Is he hitting more infield flies? Yes, but I'll take that with a guy that's going to hit the ball hard and put it in the air. You know,
and speed.
Huh? And he's got some speed too. you know, and the approach is good. He's got a, you know, nearly 10% walk rate, which is up from his brief 37 games. And we have an even split now. He had 157 plate appearances this year at Double A Reading. He had 166 plate appearances last year at Double A Reading. And the numbers are night and day. Twice as many runs. The RBI total was actually relatively close, surprisingly. Twice as many steals. The homers are up more than four times what they were in that sample size. He's striking out less. He's walking three times as much. This guy is obviously taking a huge step forward this year, and he's taking advantage of hitting in Reading. If there's one place where you can really take your time and take advantage of a newfound fly ball, you know, launch angle, revolution approach, it's Reading, man, and he's taken advantage of it. This is a guy that's absolutely going to be, you know, well within, I think, the top 75, 80 prospects and most prospect lists come July.
Yeah, so I'm with Ralph on that one and with Paste on that one. And I think the next guy, Bobuchet, was this another Barry Baker question?
This was another Barry Baker question.
So answer Baker's question. Bichette is killing it right now in his 19-year-old season in full season ball. How good – what's his ceiling? How good is he really – what's his end game with Bichette?
Yeah, he said 280, 15-15. I don't know about the steals. Maybe 15 is reasonable. I think he can hit for more power than that. I mean, when you think about the fact that, you know, he's got a 220 ISO. He's had a 305 ISO last year in his short time, I believe, in the Gulf Coast League, where he just absolutely killed it. But he had that weird appendix thing where his body digested his appendix after it burst and he didn't have to have the appendix surgery.
So not Wolverine style. We talked about that.
Yeah, he's straight up like Wolverine meets Chuck Norris a little bit. With some baseball bloodlines, you know, I don't think he's a bum like his brother. You know, he plays, you know, second base. They moved him off a short. He's now playing second. So he's a middle infielder too. Not a small guy, 6 feet, you know, 200 pounds. I just think it's all there for this kid. He's got a good plate approach. And he's just killed every level. I mean, he's killing full season ball on that Lansing Lugnuts team that has some very talented player, obviously Vlad Guerrero Jr. So he's another Bloodlines guy. He's going to have another Bloodlines guy to come up with him. So I really like Bichette. I don't see why he couldn't have 280 with 25 homer pop at this point. And we'll see how the steals shake out. As guys get older, they grow into it. Sometimes they lose a little bit of speed. I don't see any reason why this guy couldn't have 20 plus homer pop. So maybe your ceiling is a little bit low, but he's a damn good hitter. And I'm really excited about Bichette. And I think I grossly underrated him in a lot of my first year player draft rankings.
Yeah, I'm with Ralph. I'm with your evaluation there. It's probably more power than speed. I'll say more 20 plus. He's not a huge guy, but like you say, he's not small. And, you know, I mean, you saw with Dante.
He's not small.
Yeah, no, he's not small. I mean, I was watching him at the plate. He's not like a big intimidating force, but he's only 19. He's already showing some power. And yeah, why not? He could have 25 plus. I won't doubt that. Moving on to another very hot hitter, high A, Shed Long, a Longenhagen sleeper find. I always remember Longenhagen came out with him out of nowhere. Yeah, and it was a good find. I mean, it was good. Let's do him with Nick Senzel and Taylor Trammell. You know, Senzel also been pretty good of late, much better, showing the same skills, speed, five category stuff. Trammell, once again, great plate approach, 12.6 walk percentage, 12 steals, three homers. So he's showing his profile off as well. How would you rank these guys in their system as of right now?
Well, I think everyone's going to rank Senzel first, then Long, and finally Trammell. But I got to tell you, Shed Long, Sheddy. I feel like he should have like a rat name. Like Shed Long is a badass name, and Sheddy, little Sheddy,
Just add a little before it would make it a rat name.
Little Sheddy is killing the game. He's killing the game. Right now, he's outplaying Senzel. And I watched one of their games. I believe is it Daytona who I'd watch? Yeah, I believe it's Daytona. I watched one of their games on MILB TV last week, and Shedrick Long looks like the better hitter. He does. He looks smooth in the field too. I really like him. I think that the upside is tremendous with this kid. And he was slept on. I know he's been in the system for a while, but he's still young. He's still only 21. But he was a converted catcher. You know, he's taken well to second base. He's got solid enough approach. He's got some speed. He's got some power. And he's under the radar, and he just makes hard contact. I mean, you can hear it when he makes contact with a ball. You know, it's just that different sort of sound. I think that Senzel is a very high floor player. And it's easy out of the draft to buy into a guy like that. I think he's always going to hit for average. He'll have some power, but I'm thinking it's less than 20 homer pop at this point. I think he's like a borderline 20 homer guy, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because I think he's going to hit for a high average. He's going to drive in runs. He's going to be a good hitter, but I think there's still some power development that needs to happen there. And I'm really excited by Shed Long. And sometimes, you know, I'll give a guy like this a bump because he's a lot easier to acquire. He's probably more readily available in mixed dynasty leagues in the wire. So I'm more excited about Shed Long at this point. I think I got to probably rank Senzo above him, but Shetty's creeping up. Little Shetty's creeping up, baby. He's on the come up.
Long should be available in many prospect drafts like this offseason. He's definitely going to be like a pop-up guy that people are going to be interested in. Now, I'm still higher on Senzel. I just like that college track record. Long, it seems like, even though he's hitting 322, I think his underlying skills still basically look the same as last year, where I don't know if he's going to be the highest average guy. He's going to have a good pop, but not huge pop. And the stolen base is not stealing that much, but he still does have good speed. Mm-hmm. I find your take very interesting. You're like, hey, I'm watching these guys. Long look like the better player right there. So I like that. That's just like forgetting about, you know, past rankings and stuff like that. So I like that take. But, yeah, I'm with you that I'm still going to play it a little safer and stick with Senzel. And I still love Trammell. Trammell, one of my favorite guys. I had Trammell over Long in my top 100. Right now, I can't say that. Long is just a little more and still has that upside. But Trammell looks good, too. And I'd still have Trammell in the back of my top 100.
They're all awesome prospects. And that's why I wanted to talk about the three of them. You know, Trammell's been showing off the wheels so far this year. He's got 12 steals. I mean, we should have known that. In 61 games last year in rookie ball, he had 24 freaking steals.
Yeah.
That's nothing new. But I like the fact that he's getting on base. 9% walk rate last year. 12.5% walk rate so far in 2017. The Ks aren't awful, you know, 23%. He's tapping the power a little bit more. That's going to play. You know, a guy that makes good contact can run is going to hit for a higher average. You know, if the power comes along, we know the kind of superior athlete this guy is. He's finally committing to baseball full time. We've seen what's happened with Anthony Alford as he started to blossom. Obviously, he got the call up, as we mentioned earlier in the show. It's really interesting with a guy like Trammell because he could skyrocket in terms of his stock.
Yeah, you know, he could be a Brad Zimmer type, I'm thinking, as you were talking. I'm thinking.
Yeah, but I mean, he could even – but I think, like, you know
– Well, the ceiling's higher.
Ceiling this guy, and I don't want to say this because it's an all – but ceiling-wise, he could be like a Mike Trout. I mean, like, ceiling-wise, this guy could take the next step, put it all together, superior athlete. You know, he's got that in his background. He's still very young at 19 years old. We know about the football background. But
I think Trout was in the majors when he was 19. Not quite, almost.
No.
He was like 20. He was young, Trout.
Yeah, he was. I think he was 20, 21. But, yeah, I don't think he's going to be Mike Trout.
No, I'm not saying that.
But I'm saying, like, this could be a guy with a good batting average, you know, 280 to 300 and, you know, 25 homer pop and 25 steal speed. Those guys don't grow on trees, and he legitimately has that skill set. Do I think that he gets there? No, that's rarefied air. There's a handful of guys that have ever approached that in a career, you know, at any point in time. But that's a pretty interesting ceiling to have for a guy that you can probably buy for relatively cheap, you know. Don't forget, you know, Trout was later in the first round too. So the Reds have done a good job. That was a big haul last year. It's been a big breakthrough in terms of their development and where their farm ranks amongst the other 30 teams.
And Tyler Stevenson took a step forward, too, first-round pick the other year. So, I mean, let's stick with Cincinnati real fast. I don't really have much to say on Tyler Mahl. So I guess my question to you is, do you think he's more than a back-end starter in Cincy? A back-end fantasy starter, even, let's say.
I think it's Tyler Molly. I think it's Molly. Like, yeah, like the drug. Like Molly.
Yeah, all right. Not spelled that way, though.
But it's M-A-H-L-E. Molly.
Yeah.
But, Yeah, I mean, you know, he obviously had the perfect game, but dude, he's been great in double A. You know, hasn't allowed more than three runs at any start. You know, eight of the nine starts, you know, two runs or less. The ERA is 1.59. He's backed it up by, you know, a very solid FIP, 2.52. He's got a 9K per. You know, the walk rate is very good as well. He's a guy that you can still get for really, really cheap, and the value is there. I mean, he's in double A, and he's just looked phenomenal. I mean, even in the games that he's pitched, I watched the start of his maybe a month ago. It was the start after the perfect game, and he looked really good. I mean, you know, he hits the spots, good command, good control. He's got, you know, three pitches that, you know, he could throw for strikes. I got to tell you, I like him, and I think that he's a mover at this point. If you have an open spot in your dynasty, if you're in a points league dynasty where pitching is paramount, I would add him. I think that he's a guy that's going to fly under the radar. The problem with him is he's another Cincy starter, and I hate that ballpark for starters, especially young pitchers. It just can kill him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I wish he would get traded to a great pitching environment, because I think he's a guy that could play big time.
Yeah, he'd be better in a better pitching environment, because like you were mentioning, more of a control command guy.
Yeah.
His value is about equal to a back-end top 100 starter at this point. You know, he's in that same range. I don't know if I'd put him on my back of the top 100, but he's right there. I saw you wanted to get my take on Chance Adams in the notes. Chase Adams. Yeah. And I think my take's still the same as before. I still not someone I'm likely to own. I don't love the AL East in Yankee Stadium. I think he's got more mid-rotation upside than ace upside, and he still carries some bullpen risk. So, I mean, can he outproduce that and all that? Sure, and the numbers look great. He's still just not the type of pitcher that I'm likely to own in that run environment and the other factors. I know you're higher, though, and I hope he surprises.
Not really. I think
not that much higher. All right.
I think you're kind of come around to where I was, that I thought he was a good mid-rotation guy. I never thought he was a one or a two. I think that's kind of what his ceiling is. It just seems that, like, there's been a ton of hyperbole since he got bumped up, and people are acting as if this is, like, the next big Yankees prospect that's going to get called up.
Yeah,
he's going to find his way into the starting rotation and be a stud. You know, look at what Jordan Montgomery did. But like, Jordan Montgomery's a, you know, a big guy, and Chance Adams is obviously not, and kind of the complete opposite. Yeah, I know that the MLB pipeline guys were creaming themselves over Adams on their latest podcast.
Okay.
Or a couple of weeks ago, right when he got called to AAA, right? And yeah, and they were like, this is a guy that at Dallas Baptist was in a very good rotation, but he was a closer. And like, look what he's done. His stuff is ticked up as a starter in the minors. And, you know, that usually doesn't happen when guys transition from the bullpen to starting. So I really like Chance Adams. I really think they just like his name. Just like they used to cream themselves over Rookie Davis, and I never quite understood it.
Rookie Davis, he was never, whatever.
That's I think it was Callis or Mayo. One of them used to used to jam themselves like on a regular basis to the sound of Rookie Davis's name. But
Chance Adams is
the replacement for Rookie Davis now. I don't see it, and I'm once again, it's one of the reasons that, like, when we were talking about comparing and contrasting, would you rather own Hader or Jose De Leon? And I leaned Hader as bad as he pitched, partially because I've been so strong in my takes on Hader, but also because, you know, the AL East with young pitchers, and it's just, it can eat them alive, you know?
Yeah, I think it's easy for a lot of the real life, I know we focus fantasy. So I think it's easier for a lot of the real life guys to fall more in love with mid rotation type guys, where they'll rank really high. And then they're like, even like a guy like Brendan McKay as a pitcher, they'll rank him really high, and they'll be like, yeah, number three starter. So it's like, so Minnesota's going to take a number three starter with the first pick in the draft? I don't get that.
I don't either. But I've heard that they want to take him as a first base.
As a hitter. Well, which that'll make more sense to me.
That makes sense to me.
Even the rankings, so even like their rankings where McKay is like second and they're like, yeah, I like him better as a starter. He's probably a number three guy. It's like, that's the guy you're taking at the top of the draft when your team sucked and you need an infusion of talent? He's the player? I don't understand the draft mentality. Which, go for it.
Why are you going to go all Mike Leake on me? Didn't you learn from Mike Leake, yo?
Exactly. Which goes into the next group. Let's finish up the podcast with a trio of Padres pitchers. Eric Lauer, Cal Quantrill, Joey Lucchesi. I'll start with Lauer just because, you know, that was my one of my favorites. I won't say sleeper, but one of the guys I liked underrated in first-year player drafts, dominating the Cal League, 11.2 K per nine, 2.7 walk per nine, 1.56 ERA. Basically doing exactly what he did in college. The fastball's only kind of sitting 91. None of the stuff still jumps out, so it's hard for me to, like, really fall in love, but I just think he's a real solid pitcher. Going to get some – going to do well in San Diego in the NL West. I still have Cal Quantrill way over him. What are you feeling on Quantrill this year?
Yeah, I still like Quantrill, you know, especially when you look at the recovery he's had. You know, pitching in the Cal League is not an easy assignment for these guys, and all three of them have done it, you know, well. Quantrill, numbers-wise, has been the worst of the three, but I think he still probably has the highest upside. You know, and I've always liked Quantrill. I've always liked his arsenal. You know, I've always thought he had a good fastball, the changeup as well. So, you know, I'm sort of interested to see what happens when he's bumped up to the next level and how many innings they throw for him this year. I know that I've been higher on Quantrill than some people. I've even gone out and sort of stumped and said that I think that he could possibly, you know, find himself in the majors this year. You know, I don't know if I still believe that, but maybe there's a chance he finds his way in the back end of the rotation. There's just so many players that could probably get called up before him that I question it a little bit. What have you been thinking on Quantrill?
Yeah, I'll be surprised if he hits the majors this year. His last start was his worst start. He had like 4 strikeouts, 5 walks, like 4 earned in 5 innings. But before that, he was looking healthy, looking like as good as he did in Stanford when there was talk of him going, you know, 1-1, one of the best college pitchers. Yeah, I have Buehler over him. I don't think Quantrill is like a no-doubt top 50 guy. But I think now he's in that range, in my opinion, with like, you know, Martes and maybe Keller. Do you think Keller is much, like, much better than him?
Than Quantrill?
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I'm still going to lean Keller at this
point. Same.
But probably more because of the injury questions than the actual stuff.
Okay.
You know? Hey, can I throw a quick update at you?
Yeah.
So Willie Calhoun hit a walk-off homer in his last game for OKC.
Oh, last game. Yeah, I tweeted
that. Today, he opened up the game with another blast, my man.
Third loss
in 3 games for Big Willie C.
Call him up. I don't think they will, but I hope they do. He deserves it.
He does deserve it, man.
Maybe the defense is garbage, but all right. I think that's a good place to call it. To call it a podcast. What are you thinking? You have any last words?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. We were going to talk about Paul DeJong, but he's doing his thing. That's all you really need to know.
Doing his thing, not walking much. That was my concern on him. But all right, let's wrap this up. Another awesome show, Ralph. Very cool. I'm Michael Halpern. Find my work, imaginarybrickwall.com. You can find me on Tuesdays on the Razzball Baseball Podcast with Gray Albright. We're, you know, slanging some jokes over there, talking MLB players, talking redraft. Find me on Twitter, Michael C. Halpern, Imaginary Brick W. And yeah, I'm on my website. Just starting my MLB draft rankings. I did a 1-6. I'm going high school heavy. I'm going against my college heavy stuff. I'm sure we'll have a draft podcast later on, so we'll save our thoughts for that. And yeah, that's what I'm up to.
Yeah, and I'm not coughing this week, so I'm actually going to be able to get through the whole damn thing. This is Ralph Lifshitz from Razzball, baby. You can catch my writing pretty much every day now, it feels like. But I post my minor league updates on Thursday and Sundays. I have my my top 100 pitcher ranks for that are weekly. They come out on Monday with my profile of a pitcher. I haven't decided yet. I have a bunch of games DVR'd. I'm gonna go through them, decide who I'm gonna end up profiling this week. You obviously can check me hanging out with, you know, models, basketball wives, former cowboy cheerleaders. You know, just making them fall in love with me with my blue eyes and my beautiful smile that just seemed to, you know, just capture her imagination. But other than that, you can catch me talking to on my Tuesday show with my main man, Andy Singleton, over on Fantrax, doing the YouTube thing. I have enough videos now that I'm going to start putting up my scouting project and get Andy on that. I'm going to send those over to him. We're going to start posting those videos over on Razzball. You can find me on Twitter at Ralph Lifshitz, LIFSHITZBB. That's Ralph Lifshitz, BB. Anything else I'm doing, the podcast, hanging out at Dunkin' Donuts in Somerville, giving advice for people's fantasy teams. Yeah, just doing the whole damn thing. So until next week, holla back, youngin.
Yeah, let's throw a shout out to Zencaster. Thank you guys, and thanks to the listeners at all. As always. Later, guys.